The march of technology continues, bringing us closer and closer to the day when owning your own car may be less important than on-demand transportation services, and closer to the day when we expect our cars to be super connected to just about everything. Automakers are laying the groundwork for this new era, as seen in announcements this week coming from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Paul Eisenstein is with us now from the floor of the show in Vegas. Pretty busy there. Paul is the publisher of the DetroitBureau.com. Welcome and Happy New Year, Paul.
Happy New Year to you. Good to be with you.
Let us start with General Motors' big announcement this week. It's partnering up with the ride-sharing company Lyft. One might expect GM to consider Lyft as the enemy threatening auto sales. So what's happening here and why?
Well, that is an interesting question that a lot of automakers are dealing with. Will ride sharing and car sharing lead to a decline in vehicle purchases going forward? There are all sorts of theories. And in fact, at a conference that was held a few months ago at the LA Auto Show, the case was made that we might actually see increases in car sales as services like Lyft and Uber expand. I tend to err on the side that we'll see a decline, but you know what? You have to be at the forefront because you could get really left behind if you don't take a role.
Well, when we see GM pumping $500 million into this partnership with Lyft, you got to wonder then, what are the short and long-term goals and potential wins for each company?
Well, that's a big question. We're still trying to get a clearer answer exactly what GM had in mind. But I think it wanted to be a major player and a partner, perhaps get more of its cars into service with the second largest of the car-sharing services, or ride-sharing services, I should say. And it's interesting to note that at CES, Ford talked about one of its own plans, which is something called GoDrive. It's a car-sharing service that they are operating out of London and that they could expand on a global basis. They're also doing a ride-sharing program out of their Dearborn campus. They're experimenting with that, and they could take that thing public. Here's an interesting statistic that Mark Fields brought up during his presentation in a keynote speech at CES, Consumer Electronics Show. And think about it this way. If you look at traditional automotive manufacturing, that adds up to about $2.3 trillion worth of business every year worldwide. That's a big number, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, here's a bigger one. If you look at transportation services, that's a $5.4 trillion business. And while Ford has about 6% of the auto business, they have virtually nothing of the transportation services business. And that business is growing. You have more car sharing, ride sharing. You have connectivity, you know, all these services that are going into the car and the like. And so the manufacturers are saying, yeah, maybe they'll lose a little business in one place. But if they can get a reasonable share of the broader transportation services business, well, that's a lot more money.
And we're seeing other announcements. We, you know, as we talked about GM partnering with Lyft, and then we heard today Ford. We had heard that Ford and Google might join forces, but instead we learned Ford's going to work with Amazon and DJI. First of all, who's DJI?
DJI is the company that makes the world's most popular drones. Mm-hmm. These aren't the stuff you fly around your living room with the kids. These are serious drones. I actually operate one myself, which I can use to do video. I can use it for events, for example, or a car review if I want to. And they make a whole variety of drones, semi-amateur, very serious pro machines, run from about, $700-$800 up to quite a few thousand. And they're working with Ford on a project jointly with the United Nations, the idea being setting up special docking stations in the back of Ford F-150s that could be dispatched to emergency sites, say a site of an earthquake. You could use the drones to fly over the area, do a visual inspection much better than, say, traditional aircraft or people on the ground, and they would automatically not only fly back to the vehicles and redock and recharge in the tailgate area, the bed, but they could even track the car so the car could continue to be moving around and the drone would know where to fly when it starts running out of power.
Oh, that is cool. What about the Amazon partnership? What's the end game there?
Let me talk about Google first.
Sure.
I've been writing extensively about that. And to be honest, I still expect that Ford will do a deal with Google. I had a fairly lengthy and in-depth story the other day. And I believe that they're still working on it. But as I mentioned in my piece on the DetroitBureau.com, there are some challenges, and they're not quite ready to move forward. I think they will. Now, the Amazon deal is quite interesting. I happen to have a bunch of Amazon Echoes at my home and at a cottage I have not too far from Ann Arbor. These are personal voice assistants that operate out of the cloud. You can, for example, I ask it to play music or say, Alexa, what's the temperature at the time? You can use it to turn on lights and open a garage. Well, why not have it do the same thing from your car? Ford is working up a plan that would allow it to integrate this voice assistant into its in-car infotainment system, Sync. And you could be driving, for example, and you might say, Alexa, open the garage door. Alexa, turn the heat up so and turn the lights on so that the house is all set when you arrive home.
So this is right back to this idea that we will expect to have cars that are just super connected.
Connectivity is the hot story right now. And frankly, as we move forward, if we are getting to the world of autonomous driving, people are going to want more connectivity to fill the time that they would otherwise be maneuvering the cars down the road.
And here you are at the consumer, electronics show that we used to think of as, okay, flat screen TVs and cool electronic toys. And here we are talking about the future of the auto and transportation industry.
Yeah, exactly. The CES still has plenty of TVs and plenty of digital cameras. And now you're seeing the emergence of the so-called Internet of Things. And there's one study that will be released here that says that the average home within the next decade could have as many as 500 different items connected to the Internet. I have to think how you could even have 500 items, but I think they're talking about every light switch, every plug, never mind your refrigerator, and your car.
Huh.
And that's the key thing. A lot of things that you'll be looking at in the future, you'll be able to control from your car.
Fascinating stuff. Paul Eisenstein speaking to us from the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. Paul, of course, is the publisher of thedetroitbureau.com. Thank you so much, Paul.
Hey, my pleasure.
The Detroit Institute of Arts is offering us a chance to see work by some of the most important modern African-American artists. The exhibition is called 30 Americans. Valerie Mercer is curator of African-American art at the DIA. It's good to have you with us, Valerie.
Happy to be here, Cynthia. Thank you.
What is the significance of the title of this exhibition, 30 Americans?
Well, from the perspective of the Rubel family collection, they didn't title it 30 African-American artists because they felt that some African-American artists do not appreciate that being sort of the description of them, mainly because of the historical racism within museums and sometimes just using that identification, museums would sort of push them aside or give them an exhibition just during Black History Month, but it was always considered kind of minor significance. So they felt they were much more comfortable, and they felt more artists would be comfortable if they called it 30 Americans, because indeed, no matter what, these artists are American.
Yeah, and it is interesting when you think that racial identity is really something that every artist is going to answer
right.
in his or her own way.
Right. Some of it is, I think, as African-American people, we have our own individual perception of that, our own individual take on that identity. We also, a lot of us, have a collective take on that as well.
I'm wondering, Valerie, first, who are some of the artists featured, but even more so, what time frame are we talking about?
Well, I would say the earliest work in the show is by Barclay Hendricks, and that was done in 1978. And some of the artists in the show, along with Barclay Hendricks, are Terry James Marshall, Carrie Mae Weems, Carol Walker, Jean-Michel Basquiat, a number of wonderfully talented artists who are prominent in the art world. There are, as well, you know, younger artists like Nina Chanel Abney, who is probably in her early 30s, but getting a great deal of attention.
And in the 55 pieces, and there's all kinds, right? There's paintings and sculptures and installations and photographs and videos. And one of the themes is confronting American history regarding race and racism and power.
Oh, yeah, that's a powerful theme.
Well, you know, Valerie, it's interesting. We think about it. We're seeing race issues so much in the national spotlight, Black Lives Matter and police violence and affirmative action. Where do you think this exhibit fits into that discussion?
What we hope is that the exhibition will provoke conversations and also help non-African Americans learn more about the African American experience, because let's face it, I mean, this history does not belong only to African Americans. It is a part of American history. And I think in America, often that fact is ignored.
Valerie Mercer is curator of African American art at the DIA. 30 Americans will run through January 18th. There are lots of special events going along in association with this exhibition, and you can find out all the details by going to DIA.org.